Hail cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh, and I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm excellent, Josh. Thanks for asking. As always, your polite greetings do fill me with such glad tidings.
I should call you Mr. Brandon when I start these podcasts.
Yeah, I would prefer that.
You're really polite.
It'd be like the kid, what the kid down on the end of the neighborhood block calls me. Hey, Mr. Brandon, how you doing?
Does the kid at the end of your block actually know your name?
No, there are no kids at the end of my block. We're just all adults hanging out, doing adult things. I was going to say, though, I was excited in the anticipation of recording this podcast after game week 3. I got in my mind, maybe we could do an episode of the podcast where we don't endlessly talk about Sergio Aguero and Zlatan Ibrahimovic. But I'm a realist, Josh. And I believe that we will find a way to talk about them endlessly regardless, right?
It's true. One kind of half-assed elbow, and suddenly here we are.
Yeah.
We received about 60 questions this week for this episode of the podcast, like literally 60 questions. And I think probably 25 to 30 of them use the name Aguero at some point. And I think we're going to have to do the rule that we did last season, which was we came up with another name for Aguero because it was so – we just got so sick of saying his name on the podcast.
We called him Slash.
We called him Slash, but I think I want a new – I think we could do better. I think we could be a little funnier. So,
well, I think
a little more appropriate.
We had tossed around the idea last year of calling Aguero Brock Toon after one of our favorite Saturday Night Live sketches about Mr. Belvedere fan club.
I would be okay with Brock Toon, actually.
Okay. So for all you cheaters out there, Henceforth, heretofore, Sergio Aguero will be known as Coon Brock Toon. Hey, he even rhymes. Now, that's pretty cool.
Ooh, I had to use the cough button there. You know, we've done almost 50 episodes, Brandon, and that was one of the very first times I've actually had to use the cough button on the podcast. I feel like a real broadcaster. So Brock Toon. So we will have to probably link to something on Twitter and on Facebook because no one under 30 will have absolutely any idea what Brock Toon means or what it is. No, and frankly, almost no one over 30 will know it either. So
you have to have been a young American, living in suburbia in the 80s, right?
Exactly. Really, and up at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night to really.
Even though Mr. Belvedere is a British butler who I think that as the sitcom story went, the Queen exiled him to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So
is that right?
There's a British connection. He was fleeing the Queen or something like that. And then Wesley, the little boy he was looking after, was always threatening to deport Mr. Belvedere or report him to immigration. It's actually now in this day and age rather topical, I have to say.
I don't mind going all the way down this road, Brandon, because this is obviously all going to have to get cut, so we can just keep talking about it endlessly.
Yeah, let us remind the listeners, this is a Fantasy Premier League podcast, as you rightly said at the top of the episode. So should we reel it back and talk about how we did in game week 3, just to center ourselves again?
Let's do it. You know, so you and I actually watched, for the first time this year, we watched matches together, which we like to do at least every 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, we'll see how it goes when my wife is expecting, as we said before in the podcast, so it's going to be an interesting experiment, just how much football I can watch right now. Well, because right now, I basically watch all of the football. I watch all of it, everything that's on. I watched Middlesbrough West Brom, maybe the worst game that we played all season.
It was pretty dire for sure. Well, we went to the Black Horse Pub, which is in your neighborhood in Park Slope, Brooklyn, and in walks this Irish guy named William with his 9-month-old baby. And you couldn't help but to ceaselessly engage this man, William, in questions about, is your wife okay with you bringing the baby to the bar? You asked the bartender, is it okay if I bring the baby in to watch the football? How old does the baby have to be? So I feel like you left with a pretty good feeling about what your life as a football fan will be like.
I don't know how many people on the podcast or people who are listening to the podcast have kids. I don't know. I can't even guess what the number would be. Let's say like 25% or something like that. But in my experience in the lead up to this, I am very focused on how my current – I'm less focused on how everything's going to change, and I'm more focused on how I'm going to be able to fit my current life into my future life. And so I try to plan out how many hours. I clearly everything's going to get completely upended here, but it's like my little like safety valve is to be like, well, I guess if I, you know, on October 18th, there's a pretty good 12:30 match there. So if I do some stuff around the house in the morning, I can watch that match, and it's all it's a complete mess. It's not going to work.
So it was an interesting Saturday to watch games out because, frankly, not a lot happened apart from a handful of clean sheets and a Hazard goal. Well, I guess that's us speaking from the point of view of not having any Arsenal assets. But how did you rate us watching at the Black Horse? Did you have fun?
Well,
I don't think we had fun.
I don't know if you and I ever have fun when we watch sports together.
No,
I mean, we
usually, half the time one of us walks out.
We're like Statler and Waldorf from the Muppet Show. We just basically sit there and kind of mutter silently to each other. There's no celebrations ever. I think I did a little quick two-handed celebration when Jamie Vardy scored. But in general, not a lot of celebration. We kind of mutter the whole time. We say mean things about the players. I actually did kind of enjoy – so we ended up both watching Liverpool and Tottenham, which turned into a pure watch for you about 15 minutes in after –
Kyle Walker had a little case of the bubble guts or something. I don't know where he got vertigo. I'm not sure what happened to him, but he just fell down and he had to be taken off. I love these injuries where it's just this vague, quote, illness.
It leaves
me to wonder.
Well, I did read about it, and it turns out it was heartbreak. Isn't that sad? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he was so heartbroken that he actually fell to the ground on the pitch and had to be carried off.
Was it something to do with a faraway pen pal that he had lost touch with recently or heard that they – or was it a high school crush that had just gotten married?
Had to put down his dog, actually. So it was
Now, for people who know a lot about the legend of Kyle Walker, that will mean a lot to you. And I don't think we should dare go into it any further. But I do like that poll, Josh. That was very good, Kyle Walker putting down his dog, grief-stricken as he was. Well, he'll have to have a peanut butter sandwich to remember his dog by. That's disgusting.
All right, let's get right into it. I'm sorry. Yeah. We gotta refocus. We gotta recenter, Brandon.
We're having too much fun this episode. You can tell international break is imminent because we're not taking this seriously at all.
No, actually, you should see our like 7 pages worth of show notes. We're taking this way too seriously. I think I'm punchy from the 6 hours I spent putting together this running order.
Okay, I have one last thing to say about watching all the Saturday matches at Black Horse with you, Josh. You committed what I don't even know that it's a written or unwritten rule because nobody ever dared to try and break this rule. So I feel like this is a phenomenon that is generally global, but the buyback from a bartender. So say you've bought 3 or 4 rounds from a bartender. The bartender then says, hey, this round's on me. Thanks a lot. So we're sitting there. I think we're going to get into our third or fourth drink. And Josh leans in and says to the bartender, like, hey, come close. So do you think we've got a buyback coming?
Yeah. No, she was pretty scandalized by this. She was pretty shocked. I felt bad. Now, to be fair, I had been drinking pretty heavily for about 6 hours at this point.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, you got it.
You got off on the right foot, starting with like a 7% APV IPA, like 8 in the morning.
A little bell's two-hearted. Yeah, it was a little too strong. I had 3 of those in very quick succession. I think I was so stressed. You know, it's such a weird thing watching these matches. I don't know if we were always like this or the podcast took it to another level, but I am just watching these matches with just like, I'm like gripping the chair the whole time, you know?
Our listeners will agree the stress is also taken to another level. This was our first block, I think, of 6 simultaneous games happening on a Saturday, and they all more or less you had a fantasy asset in play. So that is just like such a heightened level of stimulation that, yeah, there is going to be some collateral damage, and the bartender is likely to get hit.
I mean, didn't you had to love the beauty of us spending like 35 minutes on Everton's midfield in last week's episode of the podcast, only for that match to be a 1-0 game won by a goalkeeper own goal on a Leighton Baines penalty kick that he missed that went off off of the keeper's
Shea
back.
Shea Given.
Oh, Shea it's amazing Given was, that Given's in the league. It's stunning to me.
He's got to be like 52 years old at this point. He's getting into Brad Friedel levels. But
even as a backup, it's crazy.
But despite that OG, Shea Given was loving it because apart from that, every shot that came at him, whether it was from Barkley or Bolasie or Morales, was shot directly down the middle of the goal at him. All he had to do was pick his stone hands up and catch the ball.
Bolasie had a little chance near the end. I made two moves this week. I dropped Firmino and Ali, which basically rendered the morning's match totally mute, other than like you not wanting the players that you dropped to do well. You know, that classic feeling of just like Schadenfreude, yeah. You know, like I just want everyone who didn't make the moves I did to suffer this week.
We talked endlessly about how contented we were with giving up that Firmino assist. We're like, fine, no problem. We can live with it.
That was fine. Yeah. So I turned Firmino and Ali into Eden Hazard. I was convinced that Hazard was going to go off this week, and he did. 11. He really actually should have had at least two goals in that match, if not three, really. I brought in him, and I brought in Yannick Bolasie. So, yeah, Bolasie, disappointing, but I did pick up 3 points at the clean sheet bonus. So I turned, you know, did Ali pick up only 1 point in the end? I think he might have had a yellow card.
Yes, he got a yellow card. Yep.
Right. So it, you know, I turned 6 points into 13 points, which I was happy with. And the only kind of regret that I have is I think because we talked about Everton so much on the podcast, I got a little in my own head about bringing in Bolasie. And I don't want to be too like retroactive here. I mean, you know, Bolasie he actually looked pretty good in the match, I think. And I was happy to see him as well. 90 minutes.
Toward the end of the match, I think it was shortly after Barkley came back, they started playing Bolasie through the middle of the pitch, which he looked even more threatening. I mean, he is basically built to play on the wings, but you have to be encouraged as a Bolasie owner to see Koeman experimenting with Bolasie, wanting to really work him into that offense.
Yeah, and it feels like that Everton team is kind of where it was a week ago, which is just it's a work in progress. It's not clear who you want, although I have to say, I think it might just be down to Bolasie and Bolasie and Barkley, in my opinion. I'm not sure that I don't feel great about Morales, and obviously De La Feu is pretty much off the table at this point.
Yeah, Morales was relatively absent apart from one or two half chances earlier in the match, and yeah, not as expected. Lukaku was just shocking how invisible he was in this game. Really, it's remarkable, and
it was. I mean,
we talked a lot about Troll Kaku last week, and we did get some feedback online of people saying, you know, you shouldn't sleep on Lukaku. Great striker, great runner fixtures. Don't you want to consider him? And I guess we don't rest our case. Obviously, game week 4 could change everything, but we still hasn't shown us anything.
Yeah, I don't want to say I rest my case. I don't want to be like one of those people on Twitter that throws out like 30 predictions like right before the matches start. And they're like, prediction, Ibra will not score. And then like 30 minutes later, they retweet, or you know, 2 hours later, they retweet themselves. And they're like, I rest my case. And if you go back, there's like 18 other predictions they made that didn't go through. And, you know, it's whatever. Yeah.
We were right on the clock here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. How did you finish this week, Brandon? How many points did you end up on?
I finished with a very average 43 points, one above the game average, which game week rank a little over 1.5 million. Not super thrilled with it. I mean, there were some bright spots. I mean, Ashley Williams, I was really bummed. So Ashley Williams missed a goal-scoring opportunity. There was a not terribly close goal-line clearance with him. And then, of course, he was robbed of the assist because Baines technically missed the penalty. But I had dropped...
He did miss the penalty.
He did miss the penalty, yes. He did. Yes, that's what I said, right?
Well, you kind of put technically like in quotations. I mean, if he hits that, if it's a better penalty strike, then you get the assist there.
All right, geez, you're like the rhetoric police over there.
Yeah, what's that goals committee? The dubious goals the committee.
So Williams has been interesting for me because I knee-jerked Wes Morgan out of my team in favor of Williams, and Williams only got 1 point last week, and then Wes Morgan got a clean sheet. Then he follows it up with a goal this week. Had Williams not got just a clean sheet, I would have really been kicking myself. Anyway, Williams looked good, particularly on the attacking end. Happy with that. Doubled up on Man U with De Gea and Shaw. Everyone's loving that defense right now. And Hazard was the only person in my squad to score a goal. I think a lot of people were stuck in that boat. Captain Ibrahimovic, like you, and Sunday we were just on Aguero watch all day, just hoping he didn't lose a million spots in rank if Aguero went off and scored five goals.
I made what I think was the right decision mentally, which is I actually went to the Red Hook pool with my wife. And we swam while that match was going on, and I'm so relieved that I missed the whole thing, because I just didn't want to track it, I didn't want to watch it, I didn't want to sweat it out. I mean, he was captained by, like, you know, literally over a million managers. I mean, if he had gone off for a goal, two goals, three, God forbid, one of his like four goal or five goal Sturges, the whole podcast would just be you and I lamenting how, like, what poor decisions we made to Captain Ibra instead.
Yeah, I feel like ultimately this was an average week, and there was a week of what ifs. Barkley had a couple of great chances. I still feel good about having brought Barkley in for Firmino, and let's see who I just made one transfer this week, and it was Barkley to Firmino, and he's still playing up the middle. He's the spark of that offense, and with the fixtures, I'm still feeling good that he'll come in. Walker goes off with 1 point. If it's just heartbreak, Josh, I'm sure he'll be back in game week four, so I'm not worried about that. But if Williams gets a goal or an assist, then I jump past you and I win our head to head. So it was a bit of
it was pretty tight. I mean, I felt a little I didn't have a great week either. I mean, I finished in 46, so I had a couple more points than you. You know, John Stones goes off, and I mean, what a complete blunder that was. I mean, I remember very, like, vehemently arguing on Twitter after he signed, do not bring Stones into Man City. You know, it's a very unstable defense right now. I don't see them keeping any clean sheets. And then Friday night before the season starts, there's John Stones. I've played him every single week, and every single week it's worked out poorly so far. So he's definitely like the first player out if I wild card, and he might actually go out this week anyway. I'm thinking about dropping him for John Terry. I'm thinking about a Stones to Terry defensive move, but
that's interesting.
Yeah.
What's the logic there? You just see a clean sheets coming for Chelsea?
Well, I do see clean sheets coming for Chelsea. I like their upcoming run of fixtures. Let's see here, just to pull them up real quick here. So Terry's played every match so far. He's the cheapest defender on that team at 5.5 million. And I thought he looked pretty dangerous in that match, actually. He had a scoring opportunity. Just upcoming fixtures.
See, I would – if I had 5.
Now that I'm looking, I'm seeing – yeah. Now that I'm seeing that
I would go for Arsenal.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, it'd be fun to bring in someone like Mustafi, but I think he's going to come in at like 6 million or 6.5 million. I think he's going to be up in that Toby Alderweireld price range. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I'm really up in the air about my decisions. I mean, I guess the question is, a question someone asked on Twitter, Adam Jacques. He said, has this game week changed your wild card plans? Are you thinking about wild carding? Is that on your Is that something you're considering this week? Is it something you will consider?
Me?
Yeah,
I have already started experimenting with what I would do if I were to wild card. But I'm not there yet. I'm really not. Okay. So
you have doubts. It's like the end of Serial season one.
Yeah.
You think everything points in one direction, but you still harbor doubts.
Yeah, and it's true. I mean, my opinion during that first season of Serial kind of wildly shifted right toward the end, too. So we'll have to check back on how I'm feeling about this wild card when we podcast next week.
So you don't think okay? So we're going to get into this in a minute, because we're basically only going to talk about two sort of big topics in this episode. We're going to start with Little Man City chat, but then we're going to talk about wild carding. Whether it's a good decision to do it, whether it's a bad decision to do it, you know, who you might want to target either with a wild card or just someone you might want to bring in long term because of the value that they're offering. So I will say that I'm not planning to wildcard right now. And if I were going to wildcard, I probably already would have hit the button, because I am definitely I definitely think that if you're going to wild, like if you're listening to this podcast and you're 90% sure, 80% sure you're going to wildcard, hit that wildcard button right now, because you got to get ahead of all the price changes. It can make a huge difference. I mean, even a couple of days can totally change who you can buy. And suddenly, especially between game week 3 and game week 4, you're going to see a lot of people wildcarding. So prices are going to be all over the place. And even though it's only going to be able to rise 0.3 in between the game weeks, 0.2 here, 0.2 there, 0.1 there, suddenly it's 0.5 million worth of team value that you're not going to have later on to invest in a top midfielder or whatever. And team value is so important this season when you already have 23.5 or 20, what is it? 24.5 and counting, in Ibrahimovic and Aguero.
If you look at guys like Barkley and Negredo, two prospects that would likely get into a lot of people's wildcard teams, they're already up. I mean, from their original values, that's almost a combined 0.5, which is the difference between you getting 4.0 or a 4.5 substitute goalkeeper. So you're right. You cannot discount that.
Yeah. Okay, Brandon, let's get into some of these topics. But first, I forgot. We have the meltdown of the week. This comes from Dave Baker. And I'm hoping this becomes a recurring segment. So if you have a meltdown before the next week, even a wild card related meltdown that you have over the next week or so, send it to us, because I'm happy to post on the podcast. Dave Baker says, I wildcarded after week 2 and fell for the Everton hype by doubling up with Barkley and Morales in midfield. I feel like I make this sort of mistake every season. Now I have no way of getting one of the big hitters in, like Sanchez or Sterling. Should I delete my team?
That is okay. So that sounds very much like something Ian Waters would do on the Great British Bake Off when he throws his baked Alaska straight in the bin.
Don't do it. Don't put the baked Alaska in the bin.
Davis, I want to start a new hashtag. Maybe this could be, we could change the name of this section from meltdown of the week to hashtag in the bin.
Or just the baked Alaskas.
You just want to throw your team in the bin. Yeah. I feel Dave's pain. I mean, that, releasing the wild card and then you're basically stuck with what you have until the winter. It's a lonely feeling. But hey, worst case scenario, just take a 16-point hit. That's an easy enough way to start from scratch.
It's interesting you say 16-point hit, Brandon, because Morgan Evans on Twitter said, how many transfers would you say warrant the use of the wild card? What is the max point hit you would take before using the wild card?
Well,
it's a good question.
Once you get up to 12, that -8, don't worry about it. Don't wild card. -12,
I don't know.
I think -12 is my tipping point.
I've taken a -8 like once ever, and I feel like it didn't really pay off. Maybe I'm just too. It's hard for me to take more than -4 at any given. I feel like you should never have to take -4 if you're planning well enough. I mean, so it's rare that your team gets so decimated by injuries, and I think if that really happens, if you're taking 4 or 5 players out, I think I would just go ahead and wildcard if you still have it.
You don't want to end up in Dave Baker's spot, though, where you wildcard too soon, you're not ready for it, or there are too many changes in the works. If instead,
how many of us are Dave Baker, though? How many of us live the way he lives?
We are all Dave Baker. You don't realize that question. I'm Dave Baker.
It's like the end of Spartacus.
But okay, here's the caveat. Like, if you are focused on head-to-head competitions, -8 and beyond, that's basically forfeiting your matchup for the week. That's a tough pill to swallow. But if you're playing the long game,
if you're in the AC Showstoppers League, that's a tough hit.
Yeah, that's just a no can do. But at this point, going into game week 4, if you're playing the long game, if you're going classic total points, you can stomach a -8 hit.
Okay, sure. I agree to disagree.
Fair enough. All right, so Dave's team, Josh, your team, my team, they matter little in comparison to the greatest league of all, the Hail Cheaters Super League. And it's time to give due to the top 10 of the Hail Cheaters Super League and how they did in game week 3. You want to take us through the top 10, Josh?
I will do it, and I'll see if I can do this in a way that's not boring for people, that's interesting, that highlights. You know, one thing I want to note before we get into it, Brandon, is that we had last week. We had two. So we have. I think we're now at around. I think we're somewhere between 950 and 1,000 managers in the league. So we're getting very close to the 1,000 mark. And of those 950, the top two last week were both women. Pat Dudzinski, who was also known as Patricia Dudzinski. Or maybe she's never noticed that, but that is technically her name, I think, because she posted on her Facebook feed that way. And Gloria Prieto were in first and second place last week. And I just thought that was very cool because sometimes sports and fantasy sports in particular can be extremely male dominated. So that was very cool to have a couple of women who were in the league and doing well. And so I'm kind of rooting for both of them all year. So, so as we go through the list, So in first place this week, though, we got a new guy in first, and maybe it's a woman. I don't know. Kenneth, is that gender neutral, Kenneth? It could be.
It isn't where I come from, Josh, but, you know.
That's true. We come from different parts of the country, though. You're from central Michigan. I'm from western Michigan. Very different territories. Dutch where I am. Okay, anyway.
I thought we were going to make this interesting, Josh.
In first place is Downing Young Boys, which sounds disgusting to me. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, right. Don't do that to the young boys. No, those are just Stuart Downing's children, the young boys.
Downing's young boys. Kenneth Fletcher is in first place. The aforementioned Oscar winner, Pat Dudzinski, is in second place. Football friend, James Nonan, is in third place. Fourth is Akuna Wanmata. That's a very good team name.
Love it.
Eddie Perello in fourth. Fifth place is Vicious FC. That's Antti Granlund. The Hat Wobblers, Dutch Powers, are in fifth. Actually, they're tied for fifth, but Dutch Powers had the lower score week, and so he's at the bottom of the list. He's got the red arrow.
Sorry, Dutch.
Peter, check yourself. Ike Irving is in seventh. Macaulay Maybe, Vincent P. in eighth. And then Nick Forster's Lads on Torre is also in eighth. And finally, in 10th place, we've got Uncle Pog's Dobbin by trademark Jacob Davis. And Gloria Prieto is still hanging around the top 15. She's in 13th place right now.
Everything is so close, particularly in the top 50, that, if you're 13th, it's no problem. Gloria could be number one in game week four.
It's all very tight this year. We have not seen any, all of the differentials have either delivered the same week or not. I shouldn't say differentials. All the top captain choices and stuff like that. They've all. I feel like we've had big weeks or small weeks. We've kind of done them in bunches.
Yeah, I was poking around the top 50-ish of the Hail Cheaters Super League, and there was a template that did well in game week three almost uniformly that just jumped out. And you saw these six players across so many teams: Sterling, Hazard, Lamella, Morgan, Valencia, and Foster. So just amongst the top 50 Hail Cheaters managers, that seems to be a very popular lineup, and it definitely earned out in game week 30. But, Josh, I would like to draw your attention to 202nd place in the Hail Cheaters Super League, a young manager named Luke Davis, team name Home Alone 2. And as far as I could tell, I only got to the team in 550th place. But Luke Davis came in with 77 points. And like he and a handful of other ingenious managers, he captained Hazard. And he also had Sanchez, Shaw, Williams, McCauley, Bailly, Foster. And he also has Ibra, Kuhn, and Gray up front, producing nothing. But still, Luke Davis, we have to doff our cap to you. 77 points. Well played, sir.
Well played, Luke. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Aguero, Man City, the Man City question, the Man City problem. What do we do about it? Here we go.
I'll be here waiting when we get back.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
Okay, Brandon, so you were watching the Man City match on Sunday. As I mentioned before, I was enjoying my family and the sunshine.
You're just floating on your back with some flotation devices on your arms?
While you were watching soccer matches like a fiend, I was enjoying quality time with my bride.
You should have seen the crumbs on my shirt as I sat like a slob on the couch.
Donuts.
Alone.
Just you're actually using a donut as a fork to put more donut in your mouth. It was disgusting.
I was using the donut as a spoon. If you want to get specific.
Yeah. So yeah. You watched this match. Tell me, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts were. Like the five people out there that didn't Captain Aguero, absolute terror coming into this match. And right out of the gate, Man City looked like they were going to dominate West Ham for 90 minutes. So right there, you're thinking damage control. Maybe Aguero will just get one. Okay, he'll get a brace. We'll learn to deal with it and we'll move on. But as the game went on, Aguero was not influencing the game he was by some measure, but by Aguero measure, I'm sorry, by Brocktoon measures, he was not influencing the game. And it did speak to that newfound depth it's not depth, but newfound sort of,
quality
that Pep has brought to that squad, where guys like Nolito and Sterling and De Bruyne and Silva were just running the show and Aguero was not even needed. Sterling looked amazing in this game, I have to say. I guess I'd oversell it a little bit, but he was the pick of the midfield bunch. And it's so I think a lot of people are asking about Sterling now because of that.
I think, it's so interesting. With Sterling and Lamella, it's such an interesting season for these players who have always kind of been the whipping boys of the Premier League, you know, these sort of talented, very expensive players who haven't really been able to put all together. And, you know, Sterling at times, I mean, you know, Sterling was sort of, in some ways he was hampered by the huge contract that as has happened so often in American sports too. He was sort of hampered by the size of the contract he received to go to Man City. I mean, you know, when he was at Liverpool, as you and I have been playing this game long enough that we just remember Sterling when he was a 4.5 million option in Liverpool. You know, he was a guy you'd bring in as your fourth or fifth midfielder the first couple of years. And I think he was up to 7.5 one year. And, you know, it wasn't even until he joined Man City last year that he got up to 9, you know, and then got knocked back down to 8 this year. And so, you know, he's always had a lot of promise. It's not like this guy is 26 and has 8 years of not being able to put it together. He's, what is he, 22 right now, maybe, or something like that?
He's still super raw. I mean, not super. He's still raw. I mean, there are these anecdotes making the rounds on the various punditry podcasts this week about Sterling at Liverpool would speak highly of Brendan Rodgers and his man management and him taking him under his wing. And then Sterling gets to Man City, and his complaint was that Pellegrini simply left him to his own devices.
Yeah, it was the third year of the Pellegrini era when he joined. You know, I think that pretty old team.
Presumably already knew he was on his way out.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that he was probably fighting for his job, you know, at least the first half of that year.
Right.
Until they announced the Pep thing. So, yeah, I think that, he didn't really have a chance to develop. And so I think that maybe we have to throw last year out of the – if you can throw last year out of the book, like last year didn't happen at all, and you just see him as the player who joined from Liverpool, it's all of a sudden he's a pretty exciting option because at 9 million last year was a pretty exciting option.
Yeah.
It didn't really happen for him, but a lot of us – I might have had Sterling on my team in the first week last year. I can't remember.
There was a play at the end of the game which encapsulated it for me, where it was the second goal that Sterling scored, and he did well to get the ball he was right in front of the goal. Adrian came off of his line for some strange reason. Adrian is kind of insane anyway. But Sterling got himself past Adrian into this position where any player typically would try to lay the ball off to a teammate, but he had the presence of mind to just see the width of a ball between the defender and the near post, and he just slipped it in, cool as you like. And it was that sort of decision-making that is a huge difference between Sterling this season and Sterling of old. So I think that makes me feel very confident that he's going to continue this form.
Because he's always had a problem finishing, but you see in moments. I mean, do you remember last year when he had like the world's quietest hat trick? It was this match where I think Wilfred Boney had a brace and two assists or something like that. And Raheem Sterling had a hat trick and didn't even get three bonus points. It was a very weird match. I think it was actually when Aguero was injured the first third of last season. But, you know, so he can get it done. I mean, he's so fast that he should be in positions to finish sometimes. And
right.
Yeah, so I think he's really worth looking at. And I think that we're going to get into this in a minute when we talk about wildcarding, because we tried to group we came up with sort of a top five list of our top five. We ranked them, the five midfielders we buy if we were wildcarding this week. And to both of our surprise, he's actually pretty high in that list.
Yeah, right.
Which isn't something I would have said even a week ago. And so I don't want to just – I don't think that we're chasing last week's points, though. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think that we're – I think that we're going to keep seeing more of this from Sterling, which is still kind of – I'm still not sure I actually rate him more highly than Nolito, but I think he's a very interesting option.
One other thing that I wanted to say about watching the City match, and Jeff Petter, we have a question from him. He kind of touches upon it. He says, Sterling or Nolito, who looks better? Also, are we ignoring KDB Silva too much? And one of the things that really stood out was Kevin De Bruyne in this match, and not necessarily in a good way. He had some amazing deliveries on set pieces, but if you remember last year, KDB was very marauding, and he was bringing the ball into the penalty area and getting lots of shots off. And KDB's job now seems to be just providing service, more of an Ozil type of a role. And that does worry me a little bit about De Bruyne. I mean, obviously, I don't even think we should be considering him given his 10.5 price tag and all these other options. But that did stick out to me watching this game.
Yeah, the price is definitely a consideration with both KDB and with Mesut Ozil, who we're also going to talk about. And, you know, the what makes the midfielders, these two midfielders, Nolito and Sterling, so interesting is that they're 8 million. So, you know, you save 1.5 million from Sterling versus Ozil. Now, if money is not a problem, I'm happy to have Mesut Ozil, because I'm probably going to have 24.5 tied up most of the season in Aguero and Ibra. Maybe I want that 8 million option instead, because that 1.5 million is the difference between having, you know, Jordi Amat as my, you know, third defender.
Yeah. I mean, Nolito is 9.0. He's not 8.0. So there,
oh, excuse me. Right. But Sterling is 8 point. Well, maybe he's up to 8 point. Is he up to 8.2 now?
He's still 8.1, but he's after, once we get into game week 4, Sterling's probably going to be up to 8.3, I would mm-hmm. assume. Or depending on how many people trigger their wild card, he could be up to 8.4.
Yeah. All right, so we're burying the lead here a little bit. So tell me about the Aguero elbow.
So they didn't you didn't see it in real time because it happened off the ball. And the coverage here that I was watching in the States, they dwelled on the replay, you know, they probably showed it three or four times, which is minimal by television standards.
By breathless TV standards, yeah.
But the immediate conclusion was, oh, red card offense. If the ref had seen that, he easily would have been sent off. And my read of the replay was there was intent in him throwing the elbow. Yeah, Winston Reid was grappling with him. But you don't generally see Aguero do that. You don't see him lash out very much. And my read was
he doesn't like kiwis, the fruit or the player
or the nationality. Nick Cummings on Transfer Hub today, he was pretty adamant that there wasn't any contact. So I haven't seen the right angle of the replay.
Well, I don't think contact matters. I mean, the issue is whether you know, whether he intended to elbow him. And okay. So, you know, obviously by the time this podcast goes up, tomorrow or tonight or whatever, this discussion, I don't want to go too down this road about what's going to happen because it's going to be moot by the time the podcast is actually out there. But in most cases like this, especially when everyone kind of thinks he's going to get charged, he's probably going to get charged. So let's assume that he does get charged in this case. If he doesn't, then
I want to go along with that logic, but I want to also register my statement as I would be shocked if he got charged.
Really? Okay. Cause that does fly in the face of what other people are writing and saying.
Yeah. I would be shocked.
Okay, fair enough. So let's just say he does. Let's just spend a couple minutes on it, and then let's take this as like a trial run because yeah. he's also not playing in the internationals because of an injury. So it may be that he's not playing anyway.
It's a classic international break injury though. Like there was nothing wrong with him when he comes off the pitch. Oh, we can't risk Aguero flying all the way to South America. Oh, what has he had recently?
A heel problem.
Calf complaint.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
No, exactly. This is a totally specious claim. There's no way he's got a problem.
Okay, well, be that as it may, it's Sergio Aguero. I certainly believe any time he has an injury, and we've all seen his calf complaints turn into six weeks out. So who knows? If this were Arsenal, he wouldn't play again this year. So it's totally the standard
smoke and mirrors international break. We don't want him to travel.
Okay, so let's say he just gets suspended for 3 matches. Do you keep him on your team or do you drop him?
Oh, see, this was my life last year. Of course, you remember when I brought in Aguero after he returned from injury, and then he immediately went back out on injury. Mm-hmm. So I had Aguero on my bench for, three or 4 weeks? And I managed to survive unscathed just because I had a pretty in-sync midfield at that point. But my team is pretty garbage without Aguero right now.
That's really the problem. Yeah,
it really is the problem. I think I would drop him if he was out for 3 games, because particularly looking at that Arsenal result, there are a lot of expensive players that I want to give runouts in my squad. And right. Any reason to drop Aguero is going to help me do that.
I agree. His price just isn't. I mean, the problem is that, you know. Yeah, I think that I agree. I think that I would drop him, and I would probably bring in. I might burn 4 in that case, and I would probably bring in someone like Diego Costa, who's away to Swansea in game week 4, and I would bring in one of the Man City midfielders, and that would be my move. And that would definitely strengthen my team. I mean, it's basically the kind of move you can make when you don't have Aguero and Ibrahimovic taking up, you know, so much money. I mean, right now it's hard to have. I mean, we both have Eden Hazard too, right? I mean, it's 35. I mean, you're basically, you've got $65 million to spend on, you know, 12 players. I mean, it's impossible to really do.
It really is insane. I mean, City and Chelsea, okay, but Arsenal, their run up through game week 10, Southampton, Hull, Chelsea, Burnley, Swansea, Middlesbrough, Sunderland. That to me is the bandwagon that I'd be jumping on if I dropped Aguero.
He's $13.1 million, you know, if he gets suspended for 3 matches, his price is going to drop at least 0.3, right? Yeah. I mean, maybe not at least 0.3, but I bet it drops at least 0.2, you know. So then you're actually losing money hanging on to him. Whereas if you just drop him, you can bring him back in for cheaper than you own him right now. So
it is true. What we're not saying, and I think what we're implying, is if we do drop him, what are the odds that we're ever going to be able to get him back into our squad until maybe we have our winter wild card or our half of the season wild card?
See, I disagree with that. I think that you're talking about 2 moves. You know, you can burn 4 points and you can bring him back in right away. I mean, especially if you turn if you turn him into a fairly expensive forward. Let's say you turn him into Diego Costa. Diego Costa is already up to, you know, 9.6 or 9.7 or something like that. So all you need to do is find $3.5 million. So if you bring in someone like Mesut Ozil to Nathan Redmond is $3.5 million, then boom. You've just brought Aguero back. So I don't think it's that complicated. And if he gets suspended for 3 matches, the match that he comes back is away to Spurs, which, you know, it's actually funny. I was about to call that a hard match, but Aguero loves to destroy Spurs. So
he sure does.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I wonder if they'll even contest it because usually what happens is, you know, they say that they either give you the 3-game suspension or, you know, they say that you're being charged, right? And they might not even fight it because, they'll have a couple of Champions League fixtures right around that time too. So you could just rotate them. I mean, you know, outside of the Manchester Derby, they have they're playing Swansea and Bournemouth in the other 2 weeks. So those are not matches you need a Sergio Aguero for. He might have been rested for one of those anyway.
There are so many things on the table for this break too. And Andre Gray might be serving a suspension when we come back from to game week four, which would screw up a lot of people's teams as well. So if you're losing Aguero and Gray, and say
John Stones has his
in the back,
he's got his eye problem or whatever.
he probably just lost his contact lens.
You've got George Friend at Middlesbrough. He's got another calf injury. So, yeah,
well, and the heartbreak kid, Kyle Walker.
Poor Kyle. Poor Kyle and his dog. Okay,
Josh Storkey says Piatt to Sterling. I just want to throw this out there because this will be the easiest question I think we have all podcast, right?
Yep. Do it. Do it right now and never look back.
My Arnold Schwarzenegger sound effect. Do it now.
Yeah, I mean, look back in like 3 or 4 weeks. But you know, I saw there was Slaven Bilic was interviewed in press conferences. I mean, like Lanzini will be first back, and Piatt will be to follow. And I think that was after the Manchester City match. So I think we're probably
Lanzini did come in for a few minutes at the end of the City match. So he is.
I think he meant starting. But yeah. So I think it's
gotcha.
Yeah, back into the starting 11. So I don't really know what's – do you know exactly what's going on with Piatt and why he hasn't played at all?
I think he's still trying to get his – I mean, Piatt has what must be the worst mohawk in all of professional soccer. And so I think he's probably just trying to make his mohawk not stupidly off-kilter.
Maybe that's what it is.
That's what's taking him so long.
Not a great look for Piatt. One more easy question here. Alex Davies says, time to cut losses with Stones. I thought for sure their defense had sorted itself out, but the return has been awful. Yeah, I agree. I if I was wild carding, I would definitely not have Stones on my team. He's so tempting at 5 million, but it's just, I don't know. I don't know what to say here because, I mean, all of the three goals they've conceded have been kind of, I mean, it was crazy. There was a goal in the West Ham match yesterday. I mean, there was the kind of dubious penalty, in the Stoke match. And, yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I guess
the thing that gives me pause is the fact that Pep brought in Kolarov into central defense. And yeah. I mean, I don't know that he had many other options. Obviously, he's trying to jettison Mangala. It's such a peculiar substitution. And yeah, we talked a little bit about Pep in some press conference saying he's ready to build his defense around John Stones. But of course he's going to say that. They paid, what, $50 million for him? So right. On a marquee signing like that, you have to come out there with sound bites like that to say that you're really behind such a ludicrously big signing. But I think, like everyone is now, just not convinced that Pep is prepared to build that D around him, just right in this first half of the season.
It does seem like there's still a lot of sorting out that's going on in the Man City backfield. It doesn't really seem like, and you're also getting absolutely no attacking threat from him. So, I think for me, I wouldn't mind just doubling up on the, I mean, if you can look past the Manchester Derby in game week four, I would love to be doubling up on Valencia and Shaw for this game week.
Well, you lead me right into a question from Kuda Godfrey, who says, who would you start bench in Manchester Derby if you own defenders and strikers from both clubs? So the decision-making gets even more brain crushing with Ibra and Aguero going into game week four.
Yeah.
Do we hold or get rid? Do we start? Do we captain? I mean, captaincy for me seems to be off the table for both of those guys in this game. I mean, perhaps at home at Old Trafford, Zlatan is, I guess, worth a shout. Like, that guy is a rise to the occasion, sort of. Not that Aguero hasn't scored hat tricks in the Champions League or anything. Small potatoes like that.
Yeah, I think that Eden Hazard away to Swansea is the best captain option for game week four. But we can get more into that in next week's podcast. You know, I think I don't want to talk too much about next week because I feel like so much is going to happen. We're going to hit the end of the transfer window. We're going to have a lot to talk about then. So I think we could really get in the weeds if we start talking about game week four too much. And okay. I resent you for bringing it up.
Do you resent me or Kuda Godfrey?
Everybody. When I say you, I mean everyone who's listening to this podcast.
All right. Well, let's just move on to the next topic then, shall we, Josh?
Let's do it.
Okay, to wild card or not to wild card? We got a lot of questions about wild carding. I think it's sort of the favorite thing to dwell upon going into the barrenness of an international break. You sort of get a little bored, a little twitchy. Maybe I would like to tinker around with my team a little bit with all this time on my hands. So I think we touched upon it earlier in the pod. Both of us are pretty hesitant. I mean, Josh, you're firmly not.
I don't know if I'm firmly not, but
I'm wild card curious right now.
Yeah, I would prefer not to play my wild card if I can. I think that I can survive not playing my wild card this week, but I might burn 4 points. As you've established, you're willing to burn up to 25 points each week. I don't even know how that math works.
I am willing to basically erase all 184 points I've accumulated up to this point. I'm 181, actually. I am willing to wipe that slate clean.
Can you do that? Could you? I guess you could, right? You could transfer out every single player in your team, right? And then they say, do you want a wild card or not? And then you could just go right back into the transfer page and just transfer in 15 new players, right?
It's sort of like an FPL castration. I'll turn myself into the FPL management. I'll say, guys, have you ever gotten this request before to just erase all my points? I want to start fresh. I don't want to start a new account.
You're like Bruce Wayne and Batman Begins. You want to just go out into the forest, yes. You know, learn the ways of man and the wilds absolutely. Of Mongolia or something. a couple questions to start out this conversation. Sushant says, if you were wild carding, who would you pick in your team? And Lo Jun An says, playing my wild card this week, top five must have players. So we thought that the way to talk about this that might be actually useful for people is to so forwards, we kind of know what we're doing with forwards in a sense. We talked about what happens if Aguero isn't playing. And we talked a lot about third forwards in last week's episode. So I don't think we need to talk about forwards too much. I feel like defensive questions are totally unsettled at this point, other than we all feel good about Man U's defense. But outside of that, I feel like ask us in 3 weeks, right? There's just like too much. Ask us at the next international break. There's just too much to sort out right now.
There is definitely a cult forming around West Brom defense right now, though.
Yeah, for sure. I know, and I loved having Ben Foster this week. That really helped me get to my little 47 that could. So we thought we'd group it into three different. The forward line pretty settled, defense kind of in the air, but the midfield is starting to take shape a little bit. And so we thought what we'd do is we'd rank our top five high-priced midfielders, our top five mid-priced midfielders, and our top five low-priced midfielders. And to show we did a great job at this, we actually have six for both our high-priced and our mid-priced.
We just couldn't resist, overachievers that we are.
Okay, so do you want to take the highs, Brennan?
I'm so used to the highs, I will take them. So number one with a bullet, Eden Hazard, priced at 10.2 and rising. There was a feeling coming out of the Euros that Hazard might be getting back to his old great self, and it's proven to be true in the first three game weeks. You got to have – Hazard is the template premium midfielder right now. So do we want to?
I wish it weren't true, and I sort of resent him for coming in at such a high price to start the season. But yeah, it does seem to be the case. I own him now as well.
I was shocked that he wasn't beaten down to a 9.5 after the season he had last year, where he barely even played. But anyway, there he is, Hazard. I mean, 2 goals in 3 weeks, and he looks sensational. Ozil is at number two in our rankings in the high-priced mids. He's priced at 9.5, got his first start in game week 3, and he looked sensational. The incisive run to get that headed goal from Alexis's cross was beautiful. And when Alexis, there's nothing better than when Ozil is finishing his shots on target, because right. You just expect him to be putting balls into the box, getting assists on crosses, incisive passing in close quarters. But when Ozil is finishing, mwah, that's beautiful.
Right. I agree. And I think that what's important here, too, is to note just how good Arsenal's fixtures are pretty much for the next 7 weeks or so. They play Southampton, Hull, Burnley, Swansea, Middlesbrough, and Sunderland in six of the next seven. They have the only difficult match in that whole stretch is a home match to Chelsea, which, given that Chelsea's defense has looked a little shaky still this season, I think there could be some goals there. And they finally came through and bought some players. I mean, you know, it's frustrating. They basically decided to spot Man City and Man U 5 points each. But they have actually strengthened all the areas they need to strengthen now, finally. So they have brought in a new central defender, a new midfielder.
Classic Arsenal handicap. We'll give you 5 points. Go on, do your thing. We'll catch up to you the last third of the season.
Exactly. So we've got Ozil second, and then third we have a tie for third. It's Sterling and Nolito, and here it's kind of like a kind of take your pick. I think yeah. I think there's something to be said for both of them. We talked about Sterling at length. Nolito we didn't really talk about, but Nolito is actually the one that I find a little more tempting. But I think because of that, because of the discount you get on Sterling, maybe he's the option right now.
Well, why do you find him more tempting, Josh? Having watched the, and I don't mean to lord this over you, but having watched the West Ham game, Nolito looked great, and he was receiving the ball a lot. He was very attacking, very threatening, but he's still 0.8 more expensive than Sterling, and Sterling in all ways looked just has an edge on Nolito.
Well, do you think in a match where Sergio Aguero is not dealing with a devastating calf injury that it might be Nolito that's more likely to serve the ball to Aguero over Sterling?
Sterling
is not exactly he's not a great assist man.
It could be either one. I don't want to argue this too much because there will be game weeks where Nolito is the man and there will be game weeks where Sterling is the man. I mean, it was a role reversal of game week two where Sterling really unselfishly squared the ball to Nolito to get his second goal of the game in the span of 15 minutes. But then this game, Nolito had a nice ball served right to Sterling's feet where he scored. So it could be an either or. Nolito probably a differential at this point, given how many people are flocking to Sterling.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. To be honest, I said that Sterling was a great assistant. He actually did have double digits assists his last season at Liverpool. It's hard to remember just how good he was that season. He finished with 7 goals and 10 assists, and finished season only at 8.3. So he probably started at something like 7.5.
What's even more shocking to me is that we're not talking about David Silva at all in this bracket of players, and also not in this conversation of who's going to serve the ball to Aguero. And I think it's
right.
Silva, he's just, I think he's just had a little bit of bad luck so far this season. He does not look nearly as likely as these guys, Sterling or Nolito.
He's got the ankle injury that's just never going to totally go away. So there's always a bit of a worry there with him. And I think he's probably around 30 now. And so I expect, I think his minutes will be managed a little more tightly too. So, I would be worried about having Silva, I think, just because I don't know how many matches. He'll definitely not play the full 38 this year. Right. It'll probably be closer to 30, I would think.
Right.
Where someone like Sterling can probably play pretty much every single week.
Number four on our high-priced mids, Alexis Sanchez. Just like Ozil, another Arsenal player and back in form in game week three. And I don't know how knee-jerky it is, given how this is the way it played out last season, where Sanchez looked sluggish and truly off the boil until 1 week he wasn't.
Right. The problem is he's completely unownable right now.
Yeah.
If you have Eden Hazard already, I mean, honestly, even if you don't have Hazard, I mean, okay, all of this is assuming that you have the Ibra Aguero template. I don't mean to make it sound like. I tend to think that those two players are must owned. I know some people disagree with me or don't. They don't want to play that kind of template or whatever. I do get that, but for most people who have the Ibra Aguero template, it's very hard to have Ibra Aguero and then an 11 million player as well. It's hard enough to put a team together with Eden Hazard as my 10 million midfielder. So I think that I guess you could go either or. You could have Sanchez or Hazard, but I don't know if you could really have Ibra Aguero, Sanchez, and Hazard. I think that would be It'd be very difficult to
sounds
feel
like
the winning
a dream
team.
I once had. It was a beautiful dream.
I know you can literally do it. I know you can find the players to do it, but I mean, you're not getting any – unless, you know, Etienne Capoue continues to score week in and week out, which the Messi 2 did not score in game week 3. So he's not going off 38 games this year.
All right, last on the list, number 5, Mane, Sadio Mane. Lots of question marks about this Liverpool team. We all dumped Firmino this week, but there Mane is, 8.9. He looked great against Spurs. He almost had a goal despite whoever it was that received the ball in an offside position. Robbed him of that goal-scoring opportunity, but he is the best option by far, it looks like, at the moment on Liverpool. I mean, Coutinho, we're not too big on him right now. I mean, the guy has one good game week against Arsenal in game week 1, and just true to form, the next couple of game weeks, he's taking wild shots from 30 yards out that are skying into Rosette, and it's not working for him.
It's very frustrating. It does feel like he makes it all about him once he has a big game week, and suddenly for 3 weeks in a row, it's everything's 10 feet over the bar, like you were saying. And anyway, so yeah, no Coutinho, but we'd be remiss not to have at least one Liverpool player on here, and so I think Sadio Mane is our pick of that midfield, certainly in that price range.
Yeah, so guys that were kind of like on the cusp, Coutinho, one of them, and we have to at least recognize his game. KDB, Spurs midfielders like Dele Alli. I mean, Dele Alli's yet to get off the mark. Riyad Mahrez, people are going to be scared of that guy at 9.5 after missing yet another penalty. He doesn't look all that confident at the moment either, Riyad Mahrez. I am very likely to stay away from him all season.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, I think this is just where we are right now. This is the players we bring in if we were wildcard. And it could be then in week 10 or week 11, you absolutely need someone like Dele Alli, or you need, you know, Diego Payet or Anthony Martial. But just right now, you don't. And, you know, Martial is the one who's kind of disappointing, especially after game week 1, where it seemed like he really might be the real deal, right? I mean, two assists and 2 bonus points. But it's just not really happening yet.
No, he's another one where it's a little bit like Coutinho, where you worry that Martial is so eager to make it about him or get his goal and be part of Mourinho's good old boys or something like that. I don't know. There's some mental lapses happening with Martial right now.
Also, I think I called him Diego Payet instead of Dimitri Payet. I'm sorry, Dimitri. That's really, I don't know where that came from.
Uncalled for.
It's uncalled for.
Those are the creme de la creme high price midfielders that we're considering. Let's move on.
Let's do it. So we got our top. We have this list here that says top 3 mid price mids, and it's a list of 6 players, and I just added a player to the top of the list. So it's a bit of a work in progress. Okay, so the mid price mids. Because we're only 3 weeks into the season, it's hard to have this thing totally sorted out right now. But let's try to give it a shot here. Yes. So at the top, these are midfielders priced somewhere between 6 million and 8 million. Almost every team right now, especially if you have a lot of money tied up in your forward line, needs to have one or two of these players. So here's who we have on this list. This is our rough consensus. We don't agree in all of this. But this is what we've got. So we've got Eric Lamella, popular whipping boy on the Always Shooting podcast. So we're now both, much like Raheem Sterling, I'm not even going to get down on him and conceding that penalty. You know, a lot of people, we are at the White House.
That's unlucky.
The bar that we go to is a huge Spurs bar. And so there's a lot of here we go agains about Lamella when he conceded that penalty. But I thought he looked pretty good in general. And it's really, you know, a player's having a good season when they pick up the assist and then they get some bonus points as well. It tends to be an indication. This is when Eden Hazard's doing well. It's the same thing. It's an indication that they're involved in the play. They're making a lot of key passes. They're creating chances. And so, I think that at 7.1 million, Eric Lamella is a fantastic buy. If I were wildcarding right now, he would definitely be in my team.
There's almost a 1-to-1 ratio, too, of times one mentions Lamella and mentions eyeshadow or eyeliner.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of. I don't know. Maybe I think it might just be he doesn't actually wear eyeliner, though, do we think, right?
Surely not.
Surely not. Yeah, it's like when Tim Kaine gave the Democratic National Convention speech and everyone was like, does he have fake eyelashes on right now? Why are his eyelashes so long?
It's just beautiful eyelashes. What can you say? All right, so LaMelo's number one. Okay, so yeah. Ross Barkley, 7.7. A lot of people got burned by Ross in this game week, but he still remains the most threatening midfielder in that Everton squad, and it hasn't changed. Everton still have great fixtures coming up. Just looking at, again, at what they have: Sunderland, Middlesbrough, Bournemouth, Crystal Palace, all four games in a row. Barkley is bound to get something, right?
Well, I don't know. Much like my good friend Sam Allardyce, I am not totally convinced on Ross Barkley. I don't know. I mean, 7.7 is a pretty big price too. I don't know. I think I'm bringing my own biases to the table here again. I think that he's probably worth it. I don't know. Yeah.
This is the season of destroying our biases, though. So it's the Sterling bias. It's the LaMelo bias.
I mean, I like Barkley. I mean, the thing with Barkley is that, you know, I've never really liked Sterling or LaMelo, but Barkley I've liked, you know, but he betrayed me by not scoring for so many weeks. It feels more personal with Barkley. Barkley.
He's your Fredo, your FPL.
He's certainly a player who deserves a big spot here, given their fixtures, given that he's already played pretty well this season. So let's move on.
All right. So number three on the list is somebody where I had a major breakthrough this weekend. I sort of, like we were just talking about, have had a bias against Antonio since last season. And
I thought you liked Antonio with his fun goal celebration.
Well, I do love him doing the Macarena in the year 2016 after scoring a goal, or his wonderful Homer Simpson celebration. But I don't know, there was still something unconvincing to me about his play, but him scoring that headed goal against City this weekend, I finally gained the appreciation of just how fantastic a footballer he is and how natural a goal scorer he is. So there you have it. Antonio, West Ham, 7.0, number three. We love him.
Great. Good. I like Antonio, too. I think, yeah. I mean, the question for him is, does he play – is he going to play in the midfield, or are they going to move him to left back again? You know, and so as long as he's in the midfield, he's valuable. If – maybe he will be as long as Ayew's out, which is probably what, like at least 2 or 3 months still.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think we're safe for now.
Well, West Ham's fixtures aren't all that bad with Watford, West Brom, Southampton, Middlesbrough, Crystal Palace, Sunderland. So you wouldn't be bringing him into a bad situation.
Yeah, exactly. Number four, I think we could have sort of a tie for fourth here. I like Adam Lallana at 7.1 million as a player that I have also kind of disliked a lot over the years. But I've been really impressed with how he's looked so far in Liverpool. I think that it's a great price. He's the cheapest of all those midfield options. So if you didn't fancy the three players we just mentioned, I think that – and you wanted some Liverpool coverage, I think that Lallana is not a bad bet, assuming you can't you don't have the money to fork over for Sadio Mane or Firmino.
Sure. Yeah, you want a guy at 7.1 who hasn't done anything the last two game weeks. I think Lallana's a great pickup.
He did score in game week one, though. So, you know, it's something.
He got a goal and an assist in game week one. So there it is. I mean, everyone scored in that game.
See, unlike you, I have to have the vision to see past not scoring in two consecutive game weeks. I mean, I anybody could do this podcast if they just picked the people who'd scored last week and made them their top five midfielders. Yeah, it takes a certain kind of all right, anyway, let's move on. This next player you probably like more because he did score last week.
Love him to death. Wildcarding just to get Willian in.
And that is Willian, 7.4 million. And as we just – we talked about this at the very top of the podcast, but the fixtures are about to get worse for Chelsea. But, boy, do they have a good one next week, which is away to a Swansea team that is – I don't even know what's going on there. It's like – it's such a mess. You know, it's just a – It's sad, you know. It's I don't have anything original to say. I'm sad about it. I don't like it. Yeah. And Llorente, I don't know. He picked up that assist in game week one, and that's kind of the last we've heard of him, right? I mean, He was not involved at all. I watched much of that Leicester game, and he was not involved in the game at all, really.
Ashley Williams leaving that club has to be, I mean, it's more than a canary in the coal mine. That is the only sign you need that something is deeply wrong at that club.
How do you let him go? I mean, it's not like they offered him this outrageous price. Even if he wanted to go, I think you just have to say to him, no, it's already August. It's there's not enough time for us. We're not a big enough club to just go out and buy a Schroeder and Mustafi, you know, with 3 days to go or whatever. Yeah. We can't replace you and you can't leave. And I feel like a lot of clubs have had success with that over the years, you know, saying to even John Stones last year, right? They said, you can't leave. And he proceeded to have a terrible season with Everton.
Yeah.
But, you know, but Ashley Williams is a pro. I mean, there's no way he would have, you know, if they'd kept him, he would have been a class all the way, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right, so we have a couple of clingers on in this mid-price range. Santi Cazorla, 7.5, getting consistent starts for Arsenal.
On penalties?
He is on penalties, took it very smartly this weekend, so you got to like him. And then Nathan Redmond, who's a midfielder, who's playing a little bit out of position, much further forward, almost as a striker, 6.1. at Southampton. You have Redmond in your team, Josh. How are you feeling about him right now?
Well, I was a little frustrated with his yellow card in game week 3. I really was hoping for a little bit more at home to Sunderland, that's for sure. But I mean, what's important with Redmond is that his price is fantastic. At 6 million, you can live with him not scoring every single week.
And I still refer to him in my mind as the bad Leroy Fur. He's the bad Fur.
The bad Fur.
He's got that beard that makes him look a little sinister.
It does, a little bit, yeah. All right, we got our last category here, which are the top five low-price mids.
All right, number one, he looked terrible this weekend. Gaston Ramirez. I mean, everyone sort of looked very uninspired in that Middlesbrough-West Brom match, but... Yeah. Ramirez, he's a substitute waiting to happen. He had a couple of remarkably poor challenges in the midfield where he almost could have gotten himself a second yellow. But he remains a really creative player, probably the most creative player in that Middlesbrough midfield. And if they do click at any point, one would assume Gaston is going to be involved. And at 5.5, that's a risk you can afford to take.
Number two, we've got Jason Puncheon, player. Again, we're in the low price tier here, so a lot of these players are not guaranteed hits.
These are just for fun players.
These are your fourth and fifth midfielders, but we know that Puncheon is getting some minutes. I have reason to think that he'll link up well with Benteke. He's a million cheaper than Andros Townsend, who has done nothing so far this year. Picked up an assist and 3 bonus points in the last game week. I don't really know what to think about that Crystal Palace squad. They've added a few new players, and it seems like there's still a lot to happen over there. So who knows?
They've been bad. They've been so bad for so long. I do believe that they will get better. Like, I don't believe that team with the changes they've made are as bad as they have been playing.
Yeah. I don't know if they can recover from Pardew dancing in the World Cup final, the FA Cup final. I just feel like that was such an embarrassing moment for them. I don't know, Pardew. I mean, I think he's already out wearing his welcome. I there's no thinking about it. He definitely has.
Okay, so number three, Danny Drinkwater. This is a guy that you were really talking up big. It was mere seconds after Danny Drinkwater served an assist against Swansea, and you said, you know what? I think people are sleeping on Danny Drinkwater. But it's true. The guy is class. He had an amazing season with them last year, competitively priced at 5.5, serving lots of dead balls, taking free kicks. He got an assist this week, as we mentioned. He's a good pickup.
He'd come close actually with a couple of goal opportunities the first couple of game weeks too. So I think that it's like what, you know, hindsight is 20/20. But if I were starting my team over again in game week one, to be honest, if I do wild card this week or next week, whenever I do, I don't think it'll be this week. I think there's a very good chance that Drinkwater is in my team. I like how involved he is with all of the kind of old guard Leicester players that are still getting a run out. I think that they finally picked up a win, which I think is really going to move them forward. I mean, like, the win was, it was all the old guard guys. You know, you had Wes Morgan and Vardy and Drinkwater involved. And I just think that outside of Maris, who still needs to obviously come into form, but I don't know. I just think that at $5.5 million for players involved in the attack on a good team, that's a pretty good price.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel about Leicester's matchup against Liverpool, away to Liverpool? That's a hard one to predict.
Leicester
there.
I was planning to drop Vardy, but now I think I'm just going to keep him for the next two game weeks because they're away to Leicester, and then the next match is home to Burnley. So I kind of like him for both those fixtures. I'm not sure that there's anyone I like more than him. I like the idea of bringing in Diego Costa, but I mean, who I really want to bring in is Batshuayi, but I can't do that until he's actually starting every game week. So,
I think
I'll probably just hold on to him for 2 weeks. I do think their fixtures get a little bit worse after that. Yeah. So they away to Liverpool, home to Burnley, and then they play, away to Man U, home to Southampton, away to Chelsea in the next three game weeks. And so I think I'll probably drop him before game week six.
Yeah. All right, let's get through this low price mid list. It's Leroy Fer at number four. Two goals in three game weeks. That's insane. That's Kapui territory.
Yeah, the problem is, if we want to list Fer and Snodgrass at the same time, because you got Fer, who's at fourth at 5.2, then Snodgrass is fifth at 5.6. They're both pretty good attacking player. Well, I don't know. I actually don't know if Fer's any good or not. It's a good price. But you have Snodgrass, I actually do think is pretty good. But you have good attacking players on bad teams that are running into a terrible run of fixtures. So these, like, if you're not wildcarding until game week eight, then I think that Fer and Snodgrass are players to bring in. I think for the time being, I would probably just hold off.
I think it's hilarious that Snodgrass is now listed with a calf complaint after looking like he effectively shattered his hip against that goalpost sliding into it. Like that looked truly painful.
That did look painful. They showed it, like, speaking of, yeah, the Aguero elbow got shown four times. The Snodgrass, like, sliding into the goalpost was shown 350 times.
They were doing the replay where he slides in and then they reel it back. So you see him, like, then flying off and then back in. Oh, it's very, very.
They actually had a screen, like, it was like a picture in picture for the rest of the match that just showed his thigh. It was just a close up on the thigh.
All right. So, I mean, Kapui, that's just, to me, kind of ridiculous. There's no way he keeps up that form. Also, Watford do not look like a great squad right now.
Who would you not bring in this list? Kapui, for sure, I wouldn't bring in. Kante, I wouldn't bring in. Eric Dier, no. Obviously. Gareth Barry, no. These are just not players who are going to get you anything consistently.
Yeah. Well, one of these guys on the bubble is Joshua King. There is a slight temptation there only because I currently have Jordan Ibes sucking up oxygen in my squad, and anybody in that Bournemouth squad looks better than Jordan Ibe right now.
I know. We're both kind of on the Ibe. I bailed on the Ibe bandwagon right at the last minute, and right before game week one, I was like, what am I doing? Jordan Ibe? No.
I thought it might work. I thought it was crazy enough to work, and it just hasn't really paid dividends yet.
All right, so that's your lot. I don't know how useful any of that will be. I feel like we argued a lot, Brandon. There's a lot of arguing.
I feel like we have a couple of questions we could get to here. Like,
yeah, let's get to some questions. Maybe it'll help us sort this thing out. We can try to repair our fractured friendship. Mark Evans.
Lalana rift that exists between us.
Mark Dinka says, should I use my wild card now or should I save it for the next international break in game week eight? I don't see Mark's team. I feel like if you're asking the question the way that Mark's asking it, that means you probably don't need to use your wild card, because I feel like the people who need to use the wild card, the people who are emailing and they're like, help. I have five players who have yellow flags. You know, I've got Andre Gray who might get suspended. I've got Aguero who might get suspended. I'm looking at fielding five players next week. Should I use my wild card? And then you're like, yes. But if you're just like, yeah, should I use it? I think you could probably hold off.
Yeah. No,
because it is like the I'm trying to think of some example. It's like, you know, like in a car chase or whatever, when the guy like hits it into like, they go into like overdrive or whatever, and you like shoot past the two cars, you know, like side by side or whatever. I feel like when you have a late wild card, that's what you get to do. You know, it's like, as long as you're hanging with everybody else, like when you get the chance to bring in a whole new squad in game like 8 or 10, when everyone else is already screwed out of their wild card, dealing with injuries, you can pick up so many points that way. So I really do think it's worthwhile. Now the issue there is, as fun as that is, obviously if you've got a ton of injuries and you hate your squad, you might as well just use the wild card now. You know, well, I mean, you're going to lose the points either way in that case. FPL Hitman says, if you guys had to pick, who would you choose between Walcott, Willian, Lamella, or a different 7.5 mid? Brandon, this is why we ranked them. If we had to pick, we'd pick Lamella, top of our list.
Walcott didn't even make the list.
Yeah, this is like the way they do it, you know, in like NBA drafts. You know, it's like you have your tiers. You got your tier one guys, your tier two guys, tier three guys. Then who's the best player you can get in your tier? That's what you have to keep doing. So make your own mini list and maybe use our style. Trevor Egerson says, Ellie looked pretty good in this game against Liverpool. Any hope or should I let him go? Now, Brandon, we watched this match. Ellie did not look good in this match.
No, he didn't look good. Yeah, now, Trevor. So Trevor, we happen to know Trevor. He's a friend of ours, and he was the
week two host.
Oh, yeah, of course. How quickly I've forgotten him. Put him out of my. Deny the connection our listeners might have with dear old Trevor. Trevor, I love you, man. Yeah, he and his wife are actually in England right now, and they went to White Hart Lane for the Spurs Liverpool match. So maybe it was seeing him with the naked eye. Caused Trevor to think that Ali is okay.
Yeah, I think if your eye was less naked, you would be dropping Ali for a player who was in better form. I love Dele Alli, I hope that he puts it together, but it's not happening right now, and his price is dropping like stone.
Yeah. All right, Nicholas Wu, question: what to do if Lamella and Aguero both get bans plus De La Feu no longer nailed? So one has to assume that Nicholas here has De La Feu in his squad, and yeah,
we didn't talk about the Lamella eye gouge.
Yeah, I did. We watched that whole game, and I don't remember them touching upon that eye gouge at all.
Yeah,
somebody must have just seen it after the fact.
Yeah, so I guess we might not have Lamella.
we're gonna have to go back and re-record this entire episode tomorrow when we find out
we have a whole other podcast we can do before next week's fixture. So we'll get to the bottom of this eye gouge situation. We'll analyze like the Zapruder tape and really, you know, maybe it was the inside of the eye that's not quite as bad.
I don't know. If it's anywhere as good as the Jose Mourinho eye gouge when he was at Real Madrid, then
I have a photo of it here, Brandon.
Okay, describe it to me.
It's Lamella who's wrapping his fingers around Dejan Lovren, and he's got this weird look on his face, like he knows what he's doing, but he's trying not to give it away to anybody. It's very weird. Here, I just emailed it to you.
Okay, I've got it. Okay, I just googled it myself. Yeah, it is. Lamella looks weirdly cold-blooded here. Eye gouge. It's more of a nose grab, I think, than an eye gouge. That is a nose grab.
I'm looking at there's another angle too. Where do you see the angle where it's his back? Have you seen this one?
Yeah. Now I see that. Yeah, where Lamella's back. No, Lamella is just trying to do that old magic trick that your grandfather would do. Like, oh, got your nose.
That's true. He couldn't decide if he wanted to do a got your nose or a quarter out of the ear. Yeah. And so he split the difference.
He got stuck somewhere in between. Yeah. Nah, Lamella will be fine. Nobody worry about Lamella. Yeah.
I think if I had Aguero, Lamella, and De La Feu, I would just wildcard. I mean, if Lamella and Aguero are both banned, and De La Feu is no longer nailed, and if you got Andre Gray and he loses a week, just wildcard.
Well, same goes for Aiden Green, who asks, is it time to wildcard Aguero, Lamella, Gray facing bans? Haven't got Hazard or Sanchez, Ozil, Stones is utter shite. Byram isn't starting. I have two frees, but worried it won't be enough. I worry too, Aiden. I am definitely feeling a wild card in your future.
I think that if Aguero and Lamela don't get suspended, he could probably get away with just using the two frees.
Yeah, you're true. And if I want to stick to my guns, I will still be shocked if Aguero gets any action taken against him. So, yeah, and Aiden might actually be fine.
I Love to Boom Boo says, will Ozil be the Arsenal cover we can all rely on, or do we need to squeeze out funds for Sanchez? for Sanchez. Those fixtures look scary. Or was that scary.e? Is that like an internet thing? Or was that just a misspelling?
I think that's just a typo. Probably a typo. I mean, we played this game last year. Ozil was the guy to have in the first half of the season, or the first, you know, 5/8 of the season, and then Sanchez became the man, and then sort of
What do you think about, because you could bring it, Ozil and Cazorla might be affordable. You might be able to do those two.
Yeah, I suppose.
You could do Hazard, Ozil, Cazorla. That would be a pretty cool midfield.
It would be. I'm not compelled to double up on Arsenal, though. Arsenal have always had lots of threats in the midfield, but I feel like it's never been the same two guys twice any given week.
Yeah, and I think neither of us are. I mean, we haven't even brought up Walcott, really. I'm not feeling very. I don't know what to think about poor Theo. Yeah, I mean, it's just hard to tell after that match. I mean, I feel like what we saw in that match was what we saw last season, which is, you know, it's really it's Ozil and Sanchez. You know, when that team sort of goes where it's too bad. They have two players in that team that are absolutely world class, and I guess you could probably include Peter Cech in there as well. Maybe Laurent Koscielny. So.
Here's a theory, though, that we were talking about on Saturday. Is last year we've just followed our captain, followed Aston Villa, wherever Aston Villa was playing. And this season it might be time to just follow Mike Dean, wherever Mike Dean is refereeing, and make sure you have whoever is on PKs in that game, because Dean is calling every penalty on those corner kick roughhousing situations.
Yeah. I'm starting to wonder if I'm a little worried that Swansea might turn into that team. I really love the idea of captaining anybody that's playing Swansea right now, because they are it's just so messy. You know, I mean, maybe when Neil Taylor gets back, it'll be a little bit better. I don't know, but it's not looking good right now.
Yeah.
Last question of the podcast. Eric Shelvick Medbo says, what to do with West Ham's great fixture run from now on? Attack? ? Defense? ? Well, what do you think, Brandon?
Well, it's true. Their fixture list is tempting. Watford at home, then they're away to West Brom, Southampton, Middlesbrough, Crystal Palace, Sunderland, then Everton. It is really enticing. And for me, Antonio is the star on that team right now, and he would be what I'd go for. Their defense, not all that bad. I mean, Collins, thug that he can sometimes be, is a solid central defender. Does well on corners. Same with Winston Reed.
I have a name for you, Brandon. I have a name for you.
Okay.
And this is actually a preview of next week's podcast, which is going to be a podcast focused on loans and transfers. So there's actually a lot of questions that came in about Nacer Chadley and other players, and we're going to hold those until next week, because that's going to be our end of the transfer window preview episode, or whatever, discussion podcast. Anyway, Simone Zaza. Did I say that right? Zaza?
The Zaza, the famous Zaza of the greatest performance in Euro 2016. The guy who did the river dance before he took his penalty against Germany.
So Zaza is 25 years old, 6'1" striker. He had 8-24 for Juve last season, 20-64 for Sassuolo before that. Young player, he's on a kind of a loan to buy deal this season, but he's exactly what they need, right? I mean, this team is in desperate need of a big guy who can put the ball in the net. And is young,
like
he kind of fits
like
in
a
with
real
his building
Andy
right now.
Carroll type.
So the question is, I don't know what he's going to come in at. You know, I mean, I figure because he's coming from Juve, I figure there's going to be a little bit of price inflation there. So If he comes in around like $7.5 million, I think he'll probably come in slotted as a forward. I think he's a very interesting option, especially, you know, it's hard to say whether he'll actually start from, you know, from the first week he's in. But looking at games weeks 4, 5, 6, 7 on, I think that Zaza's a pretty interesting player.
I really couldn't say one way or the other. I mean, the only thing I've ever seen the guy do is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen on a soccer pitch. So
that seems like an endorsement to me.
Yeah, exactly. Who wouldn't want that on their FPL squad? All right, so there it is, our full-blown endorsement of Zaza coming into West Ham. That's how we're going to end the podcast. So stay tuned next week. We're not going to take the international break off. We'll be back talking about new transfers coming in and previewing game week 4, how you want to set our team up. It's been a while since we've actually truly done the optimizer for all you old listeners of Always Cheating. Well, maybe we can bring the optimizer back for a special game week 4 edition.
So, and in some ways you could argue that next week is kind of another wild card focused podcast, because what I really want to look for is some, I think there's a lot of value to be found in a lot of the transfers in particular, the loan moves in particular. I mean, someone like Brendan Galloway looked fantastic in his first match for West Brom, and he's, you know, his ownership is 0.2%. So we're going to go into a lot of those players, and there's a lot of questions we actually didn't get a chance to answer in this podcast, so we'll get to those as well. But in between, Brandon, where can people find us?
Yeah, you can find us at alwayscheating.com, Josh. That's where you can find all of our podcast information, including ways to follow us. Of course, subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, where you can also leave a review. Certainly, if you like us, please do. That helps us a lot. We're also at SoundCloud and Stitcher Radio. Mm-hmm. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, at Hail Cheaters. That's where we're live tweeting during all the matches and updating you on all the various Always Cheating bits of news.
Yeah,
posting too much. facebook.com/alwayscheating. That's where we've been updating you on our very elite Always Cheating Showstoppers head-to-head league, and of course join the Hail Cheaters Super League. You can find the link on everywhere we are online. Our league code is there.
So, how are you doing in the Showstoppers League? I'm 1-2. I lost to Luke Thunshot this week.
I am actually 1-1-1, which I do like the symmetry there. I had a tie this week against Guy Meager, Forrester and Furious, and we tied at 43 apiece. So now I'm 1-1-1. I've got to catch them all the results.
Excellent. Hey, Brandon, I have one last thing to say to you, and that's Poku forever.
Thank you, Josh. Hail Cheaters.
Bye.
Bye. See you next week.